Hey everyone, the following is a special sneak preview of the new Gloves Off podcast, which is an unfiltered look at the week's events in goalkeeping that's hosted by world-renowned GK analysts Bill Reno and Saskia Weber. So you know that it's not holding back any punches. And if you want to make sure that you never miss an episode of any of our fantastic new shows, all you have to do is subscribe to the Union GK app. For more info, go to www.theuniongk.com or download the Union GK community on Apple or Google Play stores. Thanks for making Gloves Off possible, and on with the show.
Welcome back to Gloves Off. I am Bill Reno, and I disappeared for a few weeks. I ran off to Hawaii, so hopefully I'm looking a little tanner. I don't know if it's possible, if you can tell. I went from like white to like a little off-white. Picked up a little bit. But we're joined with 1999 World Cup winner Saskia Weber. And Saskia, we are in kind of the fun merry-go-round of our rosters, because I feel like we run into this every year where the season ends, and one player's here, and then the next moment they're over there. But because that's happened, that's dominoed this, and then now this.
Right.
This. And so I think the big thing on everyone's mind is Kansas City.
Right. I mean, what you saw, obviously, like a week ago, was this flood of, like, thank yous and everything like that, because it was on social media, because it was the end of the season rosters that had to be in. And so, you know, I think you saw some surprises with Angel City. Didi Haracic is now gone. But now, just today, I mean, yesterday you saw Adi Franch is gone from Kansas City, which, you know, we're not that surprised about. But I think the biggest surprise for me today was Schultz. So Schultz is gone from Kansas City as well. So my mind is, does she want to go home? You know, she's got the kids and everything like that. She came in, she, in all intents and purposes, saved Kansas City, because they, you know, I've talked about it a lot when I was broadcasting, that Kansas City was in a place where they were just like, let me score more goals than you score against us in the beginning of the season, yeah. which you can't survive on. And I thought Schultz did make a difference when she came in and obviously stopped the bleeding in a sense. And listen, it's nothing on Adi Franch. It has to do with defense and everything like that, you know. But I think, you know, and then they brought Laura Ivory in. So a lot happened in the past 24 hours at Kansas City, which is interesting. And other goalkeepers around the league. I mean, if you look, San Diego, you know, is down to one goalkeeper. Obviously, I think rumor has it, like, I don't know if I could spill who I think is going in. I think I'll keep zipped on that because I'm not 100% sure. And I think you're going to see, you know, some young, like, I'll keep this under my hat. We were talking about this before we went live. You know, there's some opportunities on different NWSL teams right now for these young college players, like All-Americans and stuff like that, that are being, you know, they're being reached out to, and who do we develop? And we're seeing a changeover in the goalkeeper position, I think more so than we've seen in a long time. But again, that goes back to, in my opinion, you know, you got to move on if you're not playing. And if you're sitting on the bench for so long, and like I bring up Fallon Tullis Joyce with that, you look at her, she was up in Seattle. She wasn't playing that much. She said, I'm going to get on a plane. I'm going to go to Manchester United. She sat behind Earps for a year, and now she starts for Manchester United, and now she's into the U.S. national team pool. So sometimes your best decision is to get out of town.
Well, I think that's the trick that everyone's trying to figure out. It's like, where is the place that's going to invest in me? And that's also going to, like, you need one part, like, focus and investment, IDP and all that. But then you also obviously need the chance. You can train all you want, but if you're not going to get a proper chance, I feel like we saw some names in the Summer Cup, but it felt like it was more of like, well, we're going to give you a look, but then we're just going to go back to our starter, which I can kind of get, but I feel like a few more teams could have been a little bit more fair with taking a look at their goalkeeper situation. But
well, I even felt that at the last games of the season, you know, a couple teams that I called that were out of playoff contention still didn't start their backups. And I was kind of a little bit like, what are you looking at right now? Like, you know, first of all, reward these players for, like, day in and day out, like, showing up and working their butts off. but also take a look at your future. Put them in these games, you know, and see what they do. You're out of playoff contention. Now is the time again. And show them, if you're going to sell them, because this is a business, like, let's get them some playing time, which I don't think was done enough in the NWSL. And we'll talk about it with the USL, which stands out to me that you're seeing goalkeepers get playing time.
I think the two big like storylines I'm following mentally with like it's like one is, and you kind of hit on it real quick, is Ivory going to Kansas City, because I feel like she's hit this weird lull where she obviously got drafted, rest in peace the draft, but then immediately they go around and bring in Dickie from UNC, and now Ivory's kind of caught in the spot of like, well, what's my role here? And now she's coming into Kansas City where, like, is she a two or a one? And everyone's going to say, we're going to give
Schultz leaving, and she's coming in as a one, technically as a one. First of all, you never come in as anything. Oh, yeah. Right, with a clean set, because I don't know who else they're going to bring. And there are going to be some other goalkeepers floating around. Are they going to turn around and bring in a Haradzic, you know, and say, you know what, she fits our style, let's bring her in and you know, see, let her battle for the number one. You don't know. There are goalkeepers out there floating around that have plenty of experience in the league.
Well, you never get brought in as something, but sometimes you get brought in not as something. And I think we've seen that with goalkeeper, and they're like, well, you're definitely not the one. And I think Ivory kind of hits that weird line where it's like, okay, I could very well see them be like, yeah, she's not going to be the one, she can be two. Or they could say, hey, like, we're going to give her a role here. She's gotten a little bit of time here and there. I don't think she's been amazing, but I don't think she's been awful, but also it's been kind of limited, and mm-hmm. you know, it depends on who they bring in. So that's my big one storyline. And then I think the other one, I'm just going to rattle off a few names that are kind of floating around that theoretically could slide back. You already mentioned Fallon over in Man U. I think that's probably a bit of a stretch as far as
her. I don't think Fallon. Should come back.
She seems settled. You could maybe see Caitlin Talbert, who's also in England, actually. She's at Tottenham. You've got some other younger keepers. Shay Yanez, who's actually in the second division there, has kind of been in the league a little bit in and out. Maybe not. Samantha Murphy, UNC alum, who's been in Sweden. So we've got a few keepers who kind of like were here at some point, or maybe they weren't, and then they've kind of left the public eye. And like, could they be brought in? So that's kind of my second thought of like, okay, who's going to get a chance? Who's going to get brought in? Who's going to come out from the woodwork of like, people are like, who is that? I didn't even know who that person was. That's kind of my second like storyline. I'm very curious to kind of track.
You have a Brisky.
Yeah.
Well. So there's some ones floating around out there. I mean, look, Sweden? Where is she? No.
She's playing for Hungary's national team, right? But she's...
Yeah, I can't remember.
I'm blanking.
I think she's going to kill me because I just forgot that. Yeah. I think that...
Yeah, Sweden. Yeah, Fitzko.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I think if you have a couple American goalkeepers floating around that are getting nonstop playing time in Sweden, you know, in England and stuff like that, you know, I think you lean into, do I use an international spot or do I bring a U.S. player back? I think Fallon has a big, good argument. She might be getting wooed by people. She's starting at Manchester United right now.
Yep.
You know, so it's like you're at the top, you're at one of the top teams. So it'd be one thing if you're in the second division or if you're somewhere like that and you're not really, but she's, like, I would have wanted to play for Manchester United.
Yeah, I'd be turning down.
That would have been a dream for me come true. Yeah. So I don't know if you'll see a Fallon come back. And if it does, it'd be a nice probably payday for her to come back. But we'll see. Like I said, I think I'd like to see Haradzic land somewhere. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, this crazy thing's going out. Lynn Williams is going to Seattle. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't see that coming. And then I was like, well, she wants to be back on the West Coast, she said. I was like, yeah, but you're in Seattle. You know, you're from Southern Cal, right? So I'm like,
terribly close. Yeah. No, certainly, certainly very interesting to see what kind of goes forward. But we're in early days of the off season, so still a lot to happen.
We say it's the early days, but truly by January 1st, you want that preseason roster in.
That's true. No, completely true. To shift gears, I was going to say like rewind the clock, but actually this is pretty recent news as well. But we have had our first, first goalkeeper from the women's national team in the Hall of Fame in a while, but actually that's not true. We've had three in the last 10 or so years.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is awesome to see. Mary Harvey, the 1991 World Cup winner. When you say like legend, I think a legend can mean a lot of things for a lot of different people. But I think in this case, I think we're all in agreement it's fitting. But if you're not as familiar with Harvey's game, she was the goalkeeper for the 1991 World Cup, where the U.S. won in China. And I think the 91 team.
She won a gold medal. She was second in the gold medal in the Atlanta Olympics. So. Yeah.
And so I feel like the like really pre-99 team, like a lot of times just gets overlooked and it's
100%.
And the being the first of something, especially in women's soccer, is like really mind blowing to me, because when you look at like where the landscape was, and you can definitely speak a ton on this, Sauce, but you look where the landscape was, like Harvey's journey in a large sense is just almost exclusively driven by passion when it came to the sport of like, hey, I love doing this. There wasn't a massive payday, obviously, where the national team was at the time, but also the pro game as well. She kept playing. She wasn't doing it for the money, you know? And so I think it's an awesome thing where she can say she was first. No one can ever take that away from her. And then she also sets the standard going forward. So you've crossed over a little bit with her. So you tell us a bit about Harvey's, you know, like, I think we've read the bios and all, but give us a little bit of color and detail here.
First of all, congrats, Harv. And it's ridiculously overdue. It's kind of grossly overdue. And it goes back to just my personal feelings about the Hall of Fame. Like, and Nick Raimondo's going in at the same time, and hats off to Nick Raimondo, but are you kidding me right now? Like, are you kidding me? Like, what have you won? I'm sorry, great goalkeeper, not taking that away from Nick whatsoever, but you go in the same class as Mary Harvey, who was a pioneer, who won the World Cup and everything, and it took this long to put Mary Harvey in, but you put Nick Raimondo in. I'm like, that's a slap in the face to me. Absolutely slap in the face. Like, why don't you let Nick wait 30 years? I'm sorry, but that's what you're telling me. You're telling me his history is equal to that of Mary Harvey's? No, sit on the bench for 30 years and wait your turn then, because that's ridiculous to me. I think it's bullshit. I'm sorry. Maybe I get a tag for saying the S word, but that's ridiculous, and I think it's a slap in the face. Now,
let me throw one thing in there, because I don't know if you – did you see the video when Harvey got – when she was told, like, hey,
I didn't see that one.
No, it was very sweet. But one of her, it wasn't the first thing she said, but one of the first things she said was something like, oh, they let people into the Hall of Fame with only like 20 something caps or something like that. And like, for me, it kind of like bummed me out. It was like, man, like, you are disparaging your own accomplishments. And it was kind of a little jokey, but at the same moment, I'm like, Nick Raimondo saying that, like, oh, I'm getting, like, from him, it's like, oh, awesome, I'm getting in. Like,
well, yeah, well, that's hard. But I think that we've talked about this. I think you have to go back to the amount of games. Like, if you're going back to, like, play goalkeepers from that time, the amount of games that the U.S. team and that you played in a year were none. Like, you played one tournament. The World Cup was obviously every 4 years. We weren't in the Olympics till 96. Like, you know, and you're talking not that many games. So it wasn't like you're playing like She Believes Cup and, you know, and this and that and the other, so there were only so many games to play in a year. And usually the starter got them. And if the backups did, they split the game. And you've even seen that with my, like, that's why when we were going over last time we talked, I was like, oh, really? I'm like sixth. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that just tells you we didn't play that much. Now, as far as, you know, my feelings on Nick Raimondo, I think it's ridiculous. I think he should, like, at some point, I guess, should be in the Hall of Fame. But I think to put him in the same class as Mary Harvey is a slap in the face to women's goalkeeping. And I think it's ridiculous. And it's ridiculous it took them this long to put Harvey in the Hall of Fame.
Well, And not to take anything away from her, but it did feel like because of all the off-field stuff she's done, which is awesome. There's a lot of
exactly like yes.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame had a really nice write-up, which it was super insightful for me of like all the twists and turns in her career and the details. That it was awesome. I'd highly recommend it.
But do you have to do off-field stuff to get into the Hall of Fame as a woman? Like, let's list Nick's off-field stuff compared to 30 years of Mary Harvey's off-field. But do you have to have that? Like, if a goalkeeper right now, Matt Turner, won the World Cup, he'd go in the Hall of Fame in 4 years.
Right, but he'd probably go ahead and put him in the next day after. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, well, I've already said they'd build a wing to the men's team, and it'd be ridiculous. Yeah. And everybody on the team would be in the Hall of Fame. So you know how I feel about the Hall of Fame. Now, going fast forward to Harvey, Harvey was incredibly professional. And for me, coming into the national team and being around somebody that everything she did was just on the field, off the field, was hold herself at such a high standard professionally, was something that I really respected and I put into my on the off the field game. I think that when I think athletically, she wasn't the most gifted goalkeeper. And she would make up for that with technically the way she would play. She was very, very focused on her technical skills, her reading and understanding of the game. So that taught me a lot of stuff. I couldn't rely on my athleticism anymore. You know, and basically what happened was Brian and I came in. And so Brian and I were very different goalkeepers than Harv was. And I think that I fell in the middle of Bri, like ridiculously athletic. Harv, I'm sorry, I love you, Harv, but Harv, not as athletic, but incredibly technically sound and tactically sound. And then I was somewhere in the middle where I was very athletic and I felt like I fell in between that. Yeah. And I learned a lot from Harvey for one side of it. And obviously had to keep up with Bri athletically on the other side of it. And yeah, that's not taking away saying Bri wasn't technical or tactical. I mean, we all were to be in that position, but Harv just, what she lacked in a certain amount of athleticism, she made up above and beyond in that. Yeah. She was intense, like super intense to be around. Yeah. And a very, like, I mean, there's stories, but they're more personal stories. Like, I wouldn't say that, I think Brian and I, the way we trained was very similar than the way Harv trained. And I think that Brian and I, like, we were very, like, head down focused, like, do our drills. If somebody pulled something out of the upper 90, you were just like, awesome, great save. But you're doing your business. And yeah, I think Harv was more, like, I felt at times more of a, like, great job, great job, great job. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to, you're picking up a back pass. Yeah. Like, well, when you could pick up back pass, I'm not going to say, I'm not going to say great job. Like, there's no reason, you know, I'm here to support you, but I'm also here to focus. But like I said, I mean, she taught me a lot professionally and technically and tactically, and then off the field, I mean, she was genius as well. And then went on just to do so many things for US soccer and everything after her soccer career ended, you know, but she, yeah, you know, winning the 91 World Cup. And then you look at who else, you know, you have like your Kim Wyants, your Amy Almonds, your Kim Maslins and all that. And that was, it was a different breed of goalkeeper back then. Yeah. It really was.
Yeah. Can you maybe give me a little more depth so I can understand, but you mentioned the professionalism in that time. I feel like it would be easy to not be as professional considering the lack of investment resources that were going into the national team, the women's game at the time. So how did, whether you're specifically or in a general sense, like how did Mary Harvey's professionalism kind of clash with what would, I guess, be kind of an amateur approach or not professional? Like what?
No, the way we were treated was crap.
That's cool that she's doing that. Like that really stands out.
Well, I think coming into the national team at that time, they held themselves to that professional standard, even though they weren't treated that way. And even though we weren't treated that way. So just because you're not treated that way doesn't mean that that's not how you carry yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Harvard played overseas. Like she just knew how things were supposed to be. And she was one of the advocates for, no, we're not being treated right. No, this isn't okay. No, you know, so like, you don't have to hold yourself as the bad news bears just because you're being looked at, like treated like nothing and staying in roach motels and stuff like that. You can expect more and hold yourself to a higher standard. And, you know, I got brought in understanding that. And I think also on the other side of it, really learning the game of soccer, as a goalkeeper, reading the game, understanding things like and stuff like she just tactically just understood it. And that taught me a lot playing with her.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. I want to read a couple lines from the write up of the Hall of Fame, which again, very, very cool to read. And they did a good job of like kind of connecting some of the spots. Cause when you look at Wikipedia, you know, you're always some info. So some of these things just really are almost kind of laughable to me. So she said something about how when she went to Germany in 1988, which is crazy to think about. She went to Germany in 1988, happened to just find some team because when she went over there, it was just for work. Like she was like moving on from soccer. She goes there, massive soccer culture. So she gets on the team, starts playing. And she said, I had to listen to all kinds of abuse. They would ask, how can you be a good player? You're from the US, which is really funny to think now of like someone asking like an American player on the women's side, like, how can you be a good player? So that's very cool. And then in 1990, she had joined FSV Frankfurt and they beat Bayern Munich 1-0 in front of 75,000 people, which is awesome. She said, she basically kind of alluded to like going to work and then going to play and that how those were separate lives and that didn't really cross over. And she said, I blew my cover because I saved a penalty 2 minutes before the end of the game and it was on national television. That resulted in some questions on Monday at work, which is awesome to see. So, yeah, very, very cool. And of course, outside the off the field, I didn't know that she was involved with establishing the U-17 Women's World Cup. There's a men's U-17 World Cup, but she was involved with that, which is very cool to see. She's done a lot of human rights stuff. And again, I think it's right to praise her for all the stuff she's done off the field.
Yeah, it just took 30 years.
Yeah, it just took 30
That's
years.
That's ridiculous. So, I mean, Hall of Fame, you should have your head in the sand. You should just go and hide. In my opinion, like you make yourself look dumber and dumber. I'm never getting in the Hall of Fame because I talk this way, but I mean, look, a first black goalkeeper on the U.S. getting in the Hall of Fame, no matter what I do for soccer, like that, probably because I'm just like head in the sand. You should be ashamed of yourself that it took this long. And that goes for a lot of other players out there. I'm sorry.
Well, maybe 30 more years of off field. Yeah. So, well, at the end of the day, we're quick to celebrate Mary Harvey because
it's congrats, Harv.
Pioneer, one of the early ones, which is awesome. And I don't have a great transition because this almost feels like a complete departure of kind of everything we've talked about. But I've been wanting to kind of dive into the 2007 World Cup debacle. And so I had planned all this. Like I had finished reading Scurry's biography. I went and watched the Untold Hope Solo hour-long episode. I think it's on Netflix. And I kind of built all stuff. And then in the last week, like things come out. I'm like, okay, well, so we're going to move forward with this. Because I wanted to get your thoughts on a few things. So kind of what I want to do is like, I want to walk through the lead in because I do think there are some interesting stuff that came out from the biography and also the episode, which you made some brief appearances in, which
I heard.
I like rewound it and told my spouse, I was like, hey, look, like that's not
there's Saskia. There you are. There
But, and then I want to go through the goals because we're here.
At the Brazil game.
Yeah, and then just talk briefly about the aftermath. And so I don't want to do like a complete dive on either goalkeeper. But I would say this is probably one of the more headline moments in certainly women's goalkeeping, but also like specifically American goalkeeping. a lot of buzz, a lot of, you know, hot takes and stuff. So I'm going to do this chronologically. And we're going to walk through this. So there's probably the starting point here in this is that Scurry had been away with the team for a little bit, and she comes back in 05-06. And going into that, the head coach at the time, Greg Ryan, essentially tells Scurry, hey, Hope's my goalkeeper, and I'm watching that. Scurry wrote about how uncomfortable that made her and kind of was confused why he would even say that to her. Fast forward to right before the World Cup, Hope Solo's father passes. Hope has been the established number one for some time now. And so she actually leaves for some time in this gap. And I didn't know this until I read the biography that Scurry played some games, and she actually, in one of those games, she beat Brazil 2-0, which would kind of play forward here. So the World Cup kicks off. Not a great start for Solo. They tie North Korea 2-2. It's kind of it's a pretty bad goal on the opening goal for Solo, but they ended up getting the tie. They advance out of the group. Solo has played every game. Scurry writes in her book about how there's these little things going on that even though she didn't know at the time, it came out later, but Solo was clearly struggling to some extent or another. But also Solo had been missing like a mandatory team dinner. She'd blown a curfew before the England quarterfinal. And so inside the camp, I think it sounds like they're struggling a bit because Scurry also wrote about how they did have a very a close moment, her and Scurry or her and Solo, about losing their father. So Scurry had already lost her father at this point. And so you have this kind of lead up of like, there is some tension before this point, but it, I think it's more life as opposed to animosity is kind of high. I've heard both of their stories at this point. But as most of us know, Greg Ryan makes this big decision, which has been universally agreed upon as an awful decision. They go final game and he switches his goalkeepers. And at this point, Scurry is 12-0 all time against Brazil, has never lost against Brazil, had won just back in July before this. And of course, Hope is livid about this and not does not take it well. I think at this point, I'd be really curious to hear your thoughts on this. But I think as I'm reading and hearing from the documentary, the two tales, which line up fairly accurate. I mean, Hope has not really shied away from a lot of this. I think what struck out to me where is the national team is notoriously known for being this like competitive cauldron that Anson Torrens brings in, and you have this high intensity, but it seems like in this specific situation, some toxicity brews very, very quickly. And you have this like Solo camp and you have the Scurry camp. And it sounds like sides aren't talking to each other. It sounds like Scurry and Solo aren't having good communication. It sounds like there's a lot of fracture. So you look back and kind of paint a picture for me. How do you navigate something that's supposed to be as intensely competitive, especially between goalkeepers, but how do you avoid the problematic, toxic moments that we'll kind of dive a little bit more into here with Solo and Scurry?
Well, first of all, it's not Bri's fault that was the choice. You're there for when you're called on to play. And all, in my opinion, the toxicity of the Scurry camp or Solo camp, it just splintered the team. And that was apparent in the Brazil game. Yeah. And it was apparent in the way Solo was acting on the bench. I mean, we saw it over and over again, like her just pissed, her sitting there, like that kind of energy. Look, you know, again, if you're Ryan calls on you, what are you going to say? You know what? I think Hope's a play. You know what I mean? That's the decision. That's the decision. And you have to support your team in that. You know, it's telling Shannon McMillan, okay, you know what, Mia, I'm going to start Shannon in this. What is Mia going to do? Just sit there pissed off? Or is she going to say, when I get my time, I'm going to go and I make a difference. I'm going to carry the water, which is what's we before me, you know? And that was lost. And we don't know totally what was going on behind scenes. Look, you're missing. Why are you missing curfew? Well, I don't know why you're missing curfew, but I know why you got kicked off the national team. So why are you missing curfew? And if that has something to do with your father and stuff like that, then that was discussed. I'm sure that was discussed behind closed doors. Why are you missing meetings? Like, what is going on? And do I think, I don't know. I can't speak to that, whether it was like, I'm going to punish Hope. Like, it's a hard line. Like, you're saying, okay, because she's the starter and because she's played, regardless of what you do, go be a knucklehead and do all this stuff, I'm still going to play you. So what kind of precedence does that start as stand as well? If that had nothing to do with it, and it was just, look, Bri has a really good record against Brazil, and I feel right now comfortable playing Bri against Brazil. That's my choice as a coach. Well, your decision as a teammate is to support your team, is to support Bri, is to cheer her on, is to bring a positive environment, and it's not about you. You know what I mean? Now, was it the wrong decision? You know, and I know Hope afterwards was like, I would have made those saves.
All right, well, don't go too positive.
Okay.
But we'll get to it. You're on a good run there. I do think it was a bit, again, trying to stay in the order here. Like, you've got a bit of a perfect storm brewing, because I've not read one thing in defense of Greg Ryan for this decision. Like, everyone has been, like, everything you just said has been mostly pretty agreeable by all camps.
Well, wait. If you take everything else out of the scenario, okay, if you take missing curfew, if that had nothing to do with it,
just like it's right? Cheap keepers, yeah.
If it's just playing in the World Cup, then no, I think Solo should have played. I don't think you should have made the change. And regardless of Bri's track record against Brazil, you know, that game, you don't know who did play in that game, who didn't play in that game. Was that Brazil full strength? Like, what were the situations? It's not the same as a World Cup. If Hope is playing fine, if she's rolling, if everything's great, why change your keeper? Like, don't mess with it if it's not broken. So no, I don't agree with the change. If everything was copacetic and going fine, but again, if things were amiss behind the scenes, and if things were going a little, if that played into your decision, then that played into your decision.
Well, and I think this is one of the things that has been like I said, there's been mostly agreement on from both sides, which has been very interesting. But of the few things that there have been disagreement about, from Solo, she said, and I have to double check, but she said for sure players went to Ryan to basically push for Scurry to play. And the way Scurry phrased it was more of like, hey, players want me to get some minutes, so I'll be ready. And I think that was a bit of the tension there, where clearly there's some, again, you've got these two camps here. And I think this is something that I don't want to do a review on the documentary, but it was very funny how they pointed out how many players dodged the request to speak on it. You do have Michelle Akers, which, love Michelle Akers, love hearing her talk, but you have a lot of people who were there that have been very quiet since about the whole thing, which, like, yeah, it was nice to read about Scurry writing about it and just being honest about it. Something she said, this will lead into the game well here.
But first of all, that doesn't make any sense to me to say, look, I love Bri, and I don't think that makes any sense to me to say, people want me to play, so I get minutes, so I'm ready. I'm sorry. Did I go up to Tony and say that during the 9-9 World Cup? Like, hey, by the way, we're playing Germany and the team wants me to get minutes, so I'm ready. If I'm not ready at the World Cup to step in as the number two goalkeeper, that's not your position. And as a coach, I'd be like, well, guys, you're not getting ready here. You should be ready there. So I don't agree with that at all. And that, I'm sure Bri wouldn't have been happy if she found out I was like banging on coach's door during 9-1 saying, everybody wants me to get some time in, so I'm ready. Guess what I did? I flew to Mexico City and played for the U-20s right before the 9-9 World Cup. So I had games in, so I was ready in case I was called upon during the 9-9 World Cup. I didn't ask during the 9-9 World Cup. Like, yeah. If you're not ready, by then you're not getting ready.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm sorry. I think
if I'm going to, just based off Scurry's own writing, and again, I'm trying to stay, I don't want to do like a book review. But,
no, it's gloves off, right?
Yeah. But I think the confusion I got a little bit was, on one hand, Bri has been put in a situation where she's not asking her teammates to go do that. So, like, I can kind of understand, like, and like you said about the coach calls your name, what are you going to do? You're going to say no? Like, so she's kind of put in a tough spot. But on the same token, it seems like her communication track or communication pathways with not only Solo, but just the team as a whole feel very, very fractured. And I think part of that is also a product of Greg Ryan as well, because even in Scurry's book, there's a number of quotes in there from even other players about how the locker room was kind of lost at halftime in the game. And so, again, this perfect storm. But I think that's the one thing I look back and I would love to hear from both sides of, like, hey, did y'all talk? maybe they tried to, and they didn't. Neither gave the sense that, like, well, I tried to talk to them and they shut me down. Like, there was none of that from either side. It sounds like you've got two very confident and two very different people who are coming at this from two totally different ways, and things happen to kind of build up and explode. But it seems like communication was not, you know, readily available.
No, it seems like, I think at the time for me, and for watching it from afar, watching it go down, and I think talking to other teammates, 99ers of mine at that time, was where was the leadership in all of this? Yeah. And I remember at that time going, like, and we'll get to it, but there's no way that we would ever publicly have come out, no matter how you feel, and say anything about a player. And if there was a problem, Fowdy would have handled it, and Carla, and we would have all sat down, and Michelle and everybody, and we would have talked and we would have figured this out. And the fact that that splinter and that disjointedness was alive in that team goes from the top down and from your leaders down and everything like that. That should have never been there. And I can't imagine I never was around something like that with the 99ers, even 95, 96. Like, I've never been around a team splintered and disjointed like that, that they're two camps. You know what I mean? Like, that's a foreign concept to me, especially with the U.S. national team.
I was going to say, especially for that team. Yeah. I think this would be the perfect scenario for people to be like, look, I mean, that was 15 plus years ago. Like, let's just, like, put things straight. Let's just put it to bed here with, like, actual information, because all we have right now is Scurry's book, what Solo has said, but then everyone else has really dodged the issue, where it's just like,
well, you know, everybody's moved on and nobody wants to talk about it. Like, like, I'd love to hear what Lil has to say. She was a captain. I'd love to see what Christy Rampone has to say. Like, they were the leaders, like, in the dressing room. Like, what do you mean it was splintered? Do I care? I don't. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I'm curious. Like,
I'm like, if you, like, I mean, look, apparently Hope needs to, you know, put out a documentary on Netflix, and apparently Brian needed to talk about it in her book. That opens the door to talk about it and stuff like that. I wasn't there, but I do have my opinions from the things I've heard and everything, and the things I saw, and it was unacceptable and embarrassing.
All right, well, hold there. All right, yeah. So we're going to get there. All right, so let's go through the goals real quick.
Okay.
I have looked for, like, quality video. The video I'm going to play is from Fox, and it's good quality. The camera work isn't the best, but also for whatever reason, they put the goals out of order. So this is the goals here. So they did a little thing before the – I forget which World Cup this is, but they did, like, a top 50 moments. It was kind of a cool little thing. But obviously this is one of them. So, they kind of spin it a little bit as like, oh, Marta, but really the story is not Marta here. So I'm going to jump to the goals, cause they're all out of her. So here's the first goal. The U.S. goes down 2-0 at half with a red card. So they're down a person, but this is the opening goal. And I think they're going to go quick here. So I'll try to work around this, but this is one of those where when you see this goal, it seems like, oh man, like, y'all are not on the same page. Like, well, and
it's communication. That ball should have just Bry should have just been able to eat this up. And it's just communication. And this goes to, is there a disconnect because you haven't been playing together? So is there a timing issue? Is there, like, a lack of communication here and everything like that? And that's what it looks like to me. Like, this should be Bry's ball. Yeah. And that's the bottom line.
Yeah. And I think this is every coach's nightmare when it comes to change the goalkeeper, that something awkward like this happens where it's like, yeah, y'all don't.
But I'm gonna tell you, I remember the feeling. And you felt this sense of, this is going downhill. And when watching the game, I felt incredibly bad for Bri because of all the drama around it. And I'm sorry, I don't know if the clips are in here, but watching, you know, Hope's face on the bench and knowing the type of atmosphere that created on the bench and everything, and they kept panning to her, and just, you could feel it from here, from the US, and you just felt like, it was just like, this isn't going to go well, because you could feel the energy from the team going, like, it was like almost just like, The two splinter groups, like, see, I told you so type of thing, instead of, okay, guys, we got to squash everything and we got to win this game. You know, let's all come together. So go ahead.
I told you so later, but yeah, right now. Yeah, so I get that it was, in some sense, great TV, because it was, again, one of the more dramatic things within the national team, goes for all the wrong reasons. However, like you're saying, it was kind of feeding in the wrong direction. It just kept, like, it kept going. So they're down 1-0. The U.S. ended up losing this game 4-0, but the second goal, again, this is out of order here. The second goal, I don't think there's a deflection here, but basically we've got some lateral movement from the top of the 18. You've got a little bit of a runner here. It might get tapped, I don't know, but you can tell she gets a palm on it. But I think all the movement here, I'll play it in real time here, because
play it in real time.
It's something that, like, you know, it's a bit of a soft goal. I think we can all look at that and say that. I think the first goal is kind of like a bit comical for me, for Solo to be like, why would I save it? It's like, that's not like a shot.
It's own goal deflection. Yeah. I mean, the argument Solo can make is that we would have been on the same page and the communication would have been, but you don't know. Here, is that Rampone?
Maybe, I can't tell.
It looks like it. I think that their far post is covered. I think she's only going near post. And I think that Bri knows she should make the save. Now, if Solo wants to say she would have made the save, look, you can always say that, but then there could have been other saves that Bri made that you wouldn't have made. So you don't know. Right. But I think the biggest thing that comes back to this is the atmosphere around the team. It was a head down losing atmosphere, and you helped create that. So I'm sorry, but that's just as dysfunctional as bad saves. Yeah. So, you know, it's just as toxic. So yeah. it's more toxic. So I'm sorry. Yeah. I just don't agree with it. So, yes, I think that this is by far, and I'm sure Bri will tell you, not the greatest game she's ever had in her life.
Well, no, she's been pretty open about that. But I think this is a perfect game to, like, help people zoom out a bit, because, yeah, we can look at the goal, and actually looking at the replay again, like, I think she actually does get deflected. But you look exclusively at just the moments on the field, you might come to some conclusion, but when you zoom out any amount, just even just a little bit, and you think about, like, well, this was happening, and the first goal was this, but also the team stuff, and then this, that, like, these sort of moments start to make a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. And it starts to, like, oh, actually.
You look at and you say they're not playing as a team defensively. They're disjointed defensively. Like, even on the last goal, you had pressure cover. You didn't really have pressure cover balance properly. I think that, you know, I think there should have been better pressure on the ball. It's not a difficult shot from the top of the box. Let her have that shot 99% of the time. Bri has that save. But at the second time, why is, if that was Piercy, I think, I'm not sure who that was, but why are you so deep? So you even allow that runner to kind of screen Bri and everything. Like, why is that run so deep in the box? So we can pick apart the defense here as well. But I think that comes down to the team just not being together playing. So just let them play. Else we're going to be here for hours. this is, I think, in today's game, I think Bri's in no man's land in this. I think she comes out, she has to set. Okay, this goes back to old school. Like, don't keep coming, because you're going to get the ball passed by you as well. She comes out, she makes herself big, but your distance from the player is so much right now that the goal is too big behind you. And she just tucks it in away. Bri's got to close space faster, so she's at about 3 yards closer to the player. She's too far here, right? So her timing coming off her line on this is way too slow. And everything, again, disjointed. Where's the defense?
Yeah.
Where's the organization? So
I'd have to go through the full game, which is actually on YouTube. But that's a very odd setup here. Like, why is she there with the ball? What has happened here? So absolutely, I think the fourth goal, it's probably like maybe the not only the goal of Sinju made a goal ever. I don't know. This is a wild goal to see from Arta. Who else? But she embarrasses our entire team here. And again, it's just kind of a mess. It kind of goes through scary a bit, but also it's 3-0. They're down a person. The game's kind of winding down.
Everybody's getting beat here.
Everyone's going to roll. I mean, like, from an objective standpoint, that's an awesome goal. I think
it is, but you've got no cover and balance on Marta. Yeah. She does the flick one. It's a gorgeous goal by Marta, but she just destroyed our defense. And then Bri, you know, heels back, you know, weight's not forward. She's on her heels. She gets beat. The ball goes under. So it's just, I'm sure nobody wants to talk about it because everybody wants to forget it. I want to forget it.
Well, yeah. And I think this game is actually a great example to like completely put the technique and tactics, not maybe all the way off to the side, but pretty far off the side, and really look at like, hey, look, like the real core of the problem here, like what is that seed? It's not, she didn't find her set position. Like that is not the issue here. Like there are things way, way more important here.
And I think you see here and that's why I said watching that game, I remember the feeling of watching that game and knowing all the drama that was going on and just watching it was the energy, and it was, the team was splintered and disjointed and it wasn't together. And that to me is more apparent. And that's what fed into the defense out of position to Bri letting up soft goals and for Bri's talent and, you know, and Marta having a heyday like that. It just, it was the perfect storm in a sense.
Yeah, truly. Yeah. It's not just one thing that's gone wrong. It's a lot. So, after the game, which is the thing I've paused you on twice now, but we'll get to it. So I've got the full quote here, or most of the quote here, at least the start of it. Someone doing their job asked Solo, you know, what they thought of the decision. And she says, it was a wrong decision. And I think anybody that knows anything about the game knows that. There's no doubt in my mind I would have made those saves. And the fact of the matter is that it's not 2004 anymore. The last things here, I'll let you roll on this, but the last things here moving forward is Solo was removed from the team after, in the documentary, she said how they took the whole team and put them in a circle and they all sat down and they just went around the circle or whoever wanted to talk and just list out all the awful things that they did not like about Solo. I don't know. I mean, I'd be curious to hear from the other side because Scurry does not mention this in the book directly. She does mention a couple points of some dialogue, but even that was kind of summed up with something of like someone saying, how the F could you have done that, and storming out of the room. Like there's clearly both sides in agreement that people are upset. And even Solo has come out afterwards pretty immediately saying that like she wasn't trying to target Scurry. I don't know how you couldn't feel that is at least somewhat targeted. And I think she kind of knows that, but it sounds like her frustration had boiled to such a high level that she's just like kind of scorched earth, like whatever, I'm going to say what I want and roll over. Mm-hmm. And then, now, you know, things are pushing back against her. So she gets removed from the team. She's not with them for the third place game. She doesn't travel home with the team. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, I mean, like I said, not much comes out about that. I think the main things, one, again, as the book, but also when she was suspended, again, not doing a total breakdown of Solo as a person, but when she was suspended, Abby Wambach made a comment of how this is a lifetime achievement award. So I guess I'm curious on your end of how do you feel, what should have happened? I think we're all in agreement.
I'll tell you exactly what should have happened. Yeah. Number one, Solo should have never been allowed to speak to anybody after that game. And whether, I don't care if Aaron Heifetz media was like, we want, no. You bring that team into the locker room, you say, look, we're all upset about this. We all are, you know, on different pages about this. Nobody's talking to the media except our captains. That's it. All you got to do is say no, right? Because obviously she's fired up. So whether she was in the step and repeat, she was right there. So she got brought out there. I know how it works. Aaron Heifetz was like, the media wants to talk to you. The answer's no, not right now. You could talk to her tomorrow or something like that. Bring your team together, captains, talk to them, say nobody's talking to the press right now because we're all so pissed off. We're all so volatile against each other. The captains will go out and do the media and they'll talk to them, say, you know, we're upset. We need to come together as a team, refocus so we can win the third place and stuff like that. She should have never been allowed to, in my opinion, right? And on top of that, what you said was so not on par for this crest and these four stars on my hat whatsoever. And it doesn't represent the shoulders that you stood on to be where you are. And that is how I felt about it. That is how my other teammates that we talked to, when it happened, felt about it. We're like, not in our house, not on our time. We are a team. We stand united even in defeat. You know, have some pride and realize that it's not about you. It's we, not me.
Well, let me ask
and
you this.
And that was disrespectful to everything we played for. So I'm sorry. And you could come at me and I've made my mistakes and stuff like that. But I've always been a teammate.
Well, I think this is one thing. Again, I think outside looking in, people can really miss the importance of like the collective whole. And that was something Scary made very, very clear in her book. And I think just in general, you talk to anyone with the national team, a high, high priority on the collective whole. Whereas on the men's side, not that that's not important, but like it's not anywhere near the same level. It's totally different. But I think I
mean, look at the Gio Reyna debacle.
Good example. Like, we go an hour on that. I think,
but how can you, I mean, obviously there are a lot of people with opinions about that and he got punished for that. He apologized, but how can you be like,
that wasn't even him. Yeah. So it's,
but
yeah.
How can you be like on a fence about like, if I'm sorry, I'd love to meet people that say, oh, she had every right to say what she said and she had every right to, you know, treat the team.
So,
but,
so I think everyone's in agreement. And even so herself from what I've gotten from her, just from hearing it, is that, there
I'm not sitting here to bash Solo. Look, she goes down as the greatest goalkeeper on the U.S. national team. I will say that. You know, I will. I mean, I think Bri and her are right there neck and neck. You know, I think I'm not arguing about her skills as a goalkeeper, what she's brought to the U.S. national team, but what she's also taken away from the U.S. national team at the same time, which is why she got suspended and eventually never brought back. And she has to deal with that. I'm sorry.
No. There's a lot we could say about Jose. The defense that has come up a little bit with her and other and supporters of her have said something like, well, if a ban had said this, it would have been handled differently, which I do think there's something true about that. That does put a weird kind of like coding on like, well, it really wasn't that bad, which that kind of bothers me. It's like, okay, well, just because someone else is doing something, that doesn't really add up. Like, I think, like, let's just call it a spade a spade. Like, that, like, you shouldn't have said
it. It doesn't work. It's the, you know, just because they do something doesn't make it right. Yeah. And the whole thing is again, I go back to the fact we've always held ourselves to the highest standard in the world. And, you know, like, have respect for the shoulders that you stand on. And, like, you know, come on. You know, and so, no, that doesn't wash with me. Oh, well, you know, if so-and-so said that, he's a man. I'm like, well,
I think the one thing I do struggle with all this was the aftermath, because we can talk all day about how messed up this was, and I think we're all in agreement.
Yeah, and Ryan made a mistake. That's the bottom line. Like, I love you, Bri. I love the U.S. national team and everything. She should have played. Like there was, in my opinion, no reason if it ain't broke. But again, I don't know what was going on backstage. You don't know what was going on behind closed doors. And if that had a factor into the team being like, you are missing meetings, you are out. I don't know what she was doing while she wasn't in at curfew. I don't know any of that. But if that was a factor, then say it was a factor.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I'd like to have people come out and be like, okay, hey, look, this is what really happened. What's the harm? I mean, like, look, we've moved past it.
Lay it out there. What's the truth?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think I struggle with, you've got someone who clearly is important to the team from an on-field success standpoint, And it seems like the aftermath did not help as far as bringing her back to the fold. Now, like, is there punishment that should be laid out? Absolutely. Is there things that you handle? But it seems
But Hope's suspensions, and she's got to own this too. Listen,
not even the suspension. I'm just talking about like the World Cup run. Like, that seems like removing her from the team, the hotel, her travel. Like, you've just thrown someone so far away where it's
well,
like,
that's that. I think, again, we're going off what we know. Okay. And if you just go off what we know, then I think that's excessive. But we're not like, I don't know, like, how many meetings did she miss? How many curfews did she miss? Like, was this a snowball going downhill? And finally, that's it. You're not a team player.
We'll go hypothetical here and we'll kind of wrap up on this, but you tell me, say hypothetical, we've got random player, you know, whatever their name is, and they're not really buying in, and you've got this competitive cauldron, you've got this high performing team, and they're not buying in, but they're also very talented. What, like, barring extreme scenarios like murder or something, like, you think there's this kind of constant, like, how, what is the pathway or what needs to be happening to kind of bridge that gap? I mean, I'm sure you've seen something like that. Like, what is, how do you bridge that gap into someone who's talented but is maybe only bought in 80-85%?
Well, I mean, I think the opportunities were there. And I think that even if we go past this World Cup, I don't know behind the scenes, so I don't know. I'm sure there was more involved. I think there was more involved to the reason she got sent home without the team and that she wasn't a part of the third place game. I think it's more than just the comments. That is my hypothetical. That is my guess. And if that's the case, then yeah, you know, you're not dressing. Do I think you send her home separately? No, I think you don't dress. You have a third keeper there, so you don't dress. And you know, that's your punishment. And Bri plays in the third place game, or maybe whoever was the third goalkeeper, I can't remember at this time, plays in the third place game. And that's what it is, you know? And so that's your punishment. I think that's enough. Now, fast forward and moving forward on that, do I think that this can go both ways. Do I think that if a man did some of the things that Hope did, would they have gotten a second chance? I don't know. But this is the argument you're going to bring up. I mean, you really kind of push the limits to the point that's why, you know, and there's certain things in the documentary I've heard and I haven't seen the whole thing, but I do know aren't brought up in the documentary for other reasons. She got suspended after the World Cup. So own that as well. You know what I mean? Own the drunk driving in the team van here in LA with your husband. Like, talk about that as well. Don't put everything on, you know, on the world against this. You got to own your mistakes. I own my mistakes when I was playing and stuff like that. And then on the field and off the field, you know, you got to own it. If you're gonna make a documentary, tell the truth. So, yeah. We can leave it at that. So
no, I think, to close on that, I think,
and I'm sure I'm going to get blasted for some of this stuff. It's public knowledge, so
Look, even once it run at you, there's nothing to run at you for. I will say, I mean, it's an hour long documentary, and the one major I had two major complaints. One, what you just said, they don't go.
Yeah, a lot of people have come to me and said that was a disappointing thing. They like hearing about her side of things, but they also know that there was a lot left out that is like, come on.
The second thing that really annoyed me is Amy Allman is in it, and they don't mention that she was a former goalkeeper. They just present her as Hope's former goalkeeper coach. And that was really annoying. It was like, well, she also
played. She's a U.S. national team goalkeeper.
I was like, why is this not, like, I mean, I love why everything she said there was great and it was awesome. But I was like, I think you've kind of misrepresented that.
I will leave you with this. When a lot of things were going down off the field, I was asked by an unnamed friend and teammate to reach out. And I reached out to Hope to talk to her, to see how she was doing. If she wanted, like, you know, going through my own battles with stuff and see she needed to talk. I never heard from her. So whether she never got the message or whatever, but I got the number and I reached out because I was asked to. And so to say people didn't try, Like, I know I did.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Would you, if they had asked you on the documentary, would you have gone on it?
There's no reason for me to go on it. I mean, I'm not, I can have my opinions like I do right now, but I'm in it.
Yeah.
You know, but honestly, my answer would be like, why? I mean, I reached out, I was never called back, and I don't know what happened behind the scenes. Yeah. So I'm telling you this from all I know, from what you know and stuff like that. So, and what I've talked about with my other teammates that maybe have a little more insight, but.
Yeah. It was a little odd hearing Akers on it, because I love hearing Akers talk. I love just how she views the world, but a lot of it was kind of like, well, I kind of knew her, you know, like she wasn't there for, you know, like she's, but anyways, well, no, like it's something that I've been wanting to talk about for a while and just finding the right platform in the right moment. So I apologize to Mary Harvey again for tagging on here.
All been about Harv and her amazing career. And listen, Nick Raimondo, I've been a fan of yours forever and stuff like that. I just think if Harv had to wait 30 years, maybe you should have to wait 30 years too. So that's all.
Hard to argue that. No. I put all this work together, and then Harvey gets in the Hall of Fame. I'm like, okay, goodness, all right. So, I'll pauses for her and for obviously Raimondo did a lot as well. I bet it's hard to argue that the 30-year wait, you know, if Harvey has to do it, then that's fair. But that's it for that's it for Gloves Off. A good run, a lot of stuff covered here. Next week I'm looking for Super League. They're on their break right now, so we're gonna dive into that. Saskia, where can people find you?
All social media, Saskia_Weber. Hit me up.
Very good, very good. And I'm Bill Reno again, all social media minus TikTok. I don't touch that.
Me either. I'm not a TikToker, so
yeah, you say that. All right. Well, thank y'all. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye, guys.